We're not going to do any icebreakers.
Ever.
You don't want to know my favorite color?
I don't. I mean, if it comes up organically, that's fine. I just don't think, I think part of chemistry is you can't force a connection. Mm. Like, you either have it or you don't. I will say, I wish everyone could see our show notes, because I'm just going to reveal some of the special sauce. The first item is Maine in bold. And then as a sub item, it says Vermont, not in bold. And then height reveal.
With an ellipsis.
Mm-hmm. With an ellipsis. So, I mean, should we stick to that? I don't want to jump ahead, but I mean, I'm just dying to know how tall you think I am.
I think you are 5'8", give or take half an inch.
And on what basis?
On looking at the photos of you in the New York Times article about dirt.
How did you do, like, Pythagorean theorem on that?
No.
Were you like, how tall is this rock?
No, look, I could just guess, you know, it's something about like, you.
It's not my energy.
I'm like 30 years old. You know, I've been walking around this planet for a while, seeing people. You know, you can kind of tell, right? Am I right or am I wrong? You got to tell
me. I'm 30 or 40 years old, and do you know that meme? Okay. No, I'll tell you after I guess yours. So, I think
you brought this up. I should say to the listeners, you brought this up. This is I wasn't thinking about this at all
because we've never met in person.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that you're 5'10", but you tell people you're 5'11".
I am 6'2".
No.
I'm 6'2".
That's crazy. That's so insulting. That's what Kara said. My friend Kara was like, no, he's tall, Daisy. And I was like, no.
I can't believe you think I'm 5'10". No offense to, you know, the 5'10s out there, but.
That's a big swath of the population, Francis.
It is.
Our whole listenership just dropped off.
5'10".
Well, I am 5'9", but typically probably more functionally close to 5'10 or 5'11 because I'm often wearing a heel. So,
yeah. I often wear a boot with a heel as well. So sometimes, you know, functionally, I might be 6'3".
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you know, just might as well.
6'2". Wow.
I can't believe, you know, this is actually
something. You don't have an Instagram, Francis.
I do. It's just private.
Mm. Okay.
We can trade
handles after this.
The last time this happened as well.
Oh, of course you do, because you watch fucking Reels.
Yeah. Well, okay. But so the last time this happened as well, people also thought I was shorter than I am, which I think is something I need to, that's like a worrying thing that I need to, you know, look in the mirror and think about.
Have you ever considered putting more attractive photos of yourself on the internet?
Those are on my Instagram. I do have plans to, I need some better photos of myself on Twitter and LinkedIn. I'll say that.
I mean, I didn't say it. You did.
Yeah. Anyways, we recorded the last episode a few days early because mm-hmm. I was in Maine when we would usually record it. And you are on record as a big Maine head.
Totally.
This is the first time I've been to Maine. I'm going to say that it was nice, but I think it's a little overhyped.
Okay. Well, sometimes your first time isn't everything that it's cracked up to be, but your second and third time
will be great.
Your fourth time.
Okay. Here's my one takeaway, actually. Okay. I did, obviously, I had a lobster roll. I think it was for two lobster rolls. I think we paid $70, which I think is a little more inflated than usual.
Where were you?
This was in Northeast Harbor.
Okay.
Yeah, at Beale's Lobster Pier.
I would say, yeah, I think that is above market. Like, I still think you can get them for $25.
Well, here's my thing. I think actually that's the right price. I think they should be $35 each.
Because you're a farm boy.
Yeah. Yes. You know, those
farm
those
boys and
men,
fisher boys.
Those lobster men are out there working so hard.
Yeah,
and, you know, so are the people in the restaurant. I think that a lobster roll should be $35 and you should only get one once every 2 years. I saw this tweet the other day that was like steak at Costco, and it was like a $100 pack of steak. it was like $16 a pound prime ribeye, whatever, something like that. Mm-hmm. And the person tweeting it was tweeting it as if like, this is way too expensive. Like steak should not be this expensive. But it was
like that's actually cheap. Nice ribeye. Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
No, I think things should be the true cost, obviously.
Tastes just like it costs.
Incredible callback. It does. Many things in life taste just like they cost. Or the best things do, I guess.
Best things. Mm-hmm. The best things in life. Some say they're free. Some say they are $35.
And you only get them once every two years? What's wrong with you?
It's duality.
Are you an ascetic too?
No. I do like to suffer though. You know, I wasn't raised religious, but like my dad's side is Catholic. My mom's side is Jewish. So they both abandoned it. But I think I inherited both types of guilt.
Suffering and guilt.
Yeah.
Good sense of humor.
Yeah.
And
you said it.
Yeah. Strong aesthetic sensibility. Andrew Virgo.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Birthday's coming up. Yeah.
When is your birthday?
It is. I will say it is in exactly 2 weeks from today.
I mean, I can't do that math in my head. For
we'll be recording a podcast when it happens. On the day.
This is so Virgo. This is like,
what, to
I'm
know,
not going
to
give
know,
you too much information
to facts,
because I don't
know what
want you to make a big deal out of
two
it.
2 weeks from now?
And what if I come on this mic and I'm wearing a hat and, you know.
What's the hat?
I have a kazoo.
Well, that would be a birthday hat, obviously.
Maybe even a birthday hat.
Yeah.
Maybe I sing you one of the worst songs of all time, according to some people.
It can't
be. The birthday song.
Okay. Well, wait. Okay. I do want to talk about this.
It can't be worse than your singing.
It can't be worse than my singing, which Tom specifically did not take out, even though
that's why I always listen in advance, Francis. Yeah.
Look.
I always listen before it goes out.
It's a treat for our listeners, I think.
It was a trick. It was a treat. Let's be clear. Well,
it makes you look good by not singing. But okay, I want to talk about the Dirt Worst
restraint.
Song piece and the conversation around it.
So Are we there yet? We skipped Vermont. We're not doing Vermont.
We don't need to talk about Vermont.
Okay, fuck Vermont.
I think I like Vermont more than Maine for now. Whoa, with the record show. But I want to talk about the worst song piece now that we're talking about it. Happy birthday song. So this is a thing that you guys do like once every 3 months or so, where it's this like friend of the soil, when the spirit moves me.
And I have to tell you about my controversial one that I keep threatening to do, but I think is kind of inappropriate. And I did tell Paul about it on the record for the New York Times, and he did not put it in the piece.
Which is that a good thing or a bad thing that he, that, do you want
to
I
be didn't
secret?
Know which way he was going to go with it. So this is a prompt that is like, I keep threatening to do it, but I think it's like kind of,
Let me just say quick for any listeners who aren't familiar with this. This is like every few months Dirt will do a piece where it's like you text like 20, 30 people for like whether it's like what's better to desire or be desired was a big one a few months ago.
Yeah, and what is better, Francis?
It is to desire. I just told you I'm like Catholic and Jewish. Obviously it's to desire. It's to suffer. I actually think that's like what underpins
not a Buddhist,
all of life.
Clearly.
Anyways. But yeah, it's these pieces where you guys like crowdsource hot take. It's a hot take crowdsource, friend of the newsletter. So
I think we call them dirt prompts. I don't know.
You can
like
market
I think
that
we
better.
Call them. I made them up. I don't know. So okay. I have this like fake one that I bring out sometimes, which is if you crashed your car, nobody got hurt.
Have
nobody
you ever?
Died. I've never crashed my car. Okay, I probably will now that I said that. And I've never gotten a ticket. Can you believe that?
I just knocked on wood. I think the listener could hear that. Knocked on wood for you.
I thought that was my neighbor.
You've never gotten a ticket?
I did appreciate that Tom cut out my neighbor doing like shave and a haircut two bits on his floor at the end of the last podcast. Why did he do that?
That was kind of rude of the neighbor.
I don't know if he even knew.
Okay, wait.
He might have heard me down here and was like, I'm going to.
That's kind of what I thought it was.
Because we're friendly.
I thought it was I thought it was on Casey's side.
No, it was my neighbor.
Yeah.
It was my neighbor.
Okay, but if you crash your car, what's the thing?
Okay, so I can't emphasize enough. Nobody dies. Everyone's fine. But you're
aesthetic
you're
damage.
Stuck and you can't get out right away. And the song that you're listening to is looping.
Mm.
What song would you want it to be?
What song would I want it to be?
I'll tell you what Paul said. I'll tell you what I said. And then you got to tell me your answer.
Okay. So, well, is this like, so it's like when the rescuer finds me or the bystander comes, and it's like, how do I want to be perceived as I'm like trapped inside my car, basically?
Well, yeah. And like what, and how, I mean, your self-perception too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is a hard one.
I know, because it's not necessarily your favorite song, right?
Yeah. See, I don't drive. I haven't had a car. I haven't, like...
Oh, do you know how to drive?
I do know how to drive. I mean, okay.
Did you learn on a tractor?
No. No. Actually, that's a whole other thing we don't need to get into. But
we do. We might.
Well, okay. I'll say really quick. My dad told me, speaking of my birthday, my dad told me he was going to teach me how to drive the tractor on the farm on my 10th birthday.
Okay.
Never did. Didn't actually do it until, I think I was like 27.
Insane trust issues. 17 years of trust issues.
I mean, 17 years of trust issues. But, you know, I might not be talking to you if he had. I always wonder if I actually would have, you know, gone like the take over the farm route he'd done that. But I didn't. He didn't. And I didn't.
That's deeper than I was thinking. Okay.
But, okay. But the point is, I do know how to drive. But that's why I haven't, like, you know, I haven't had a car since high school. You know, when I would have to, like, 8 miles from school, I'd have to drive to school. So I love not driving, but, you know, drove to Maine, rented a car. What were we even listening to? I was listening to the new Physical Therapy, Patrick Holland, Daymaxing EP. So, you know, kind of like chill, but driving house-ish. Mm-hmm. More so, though, I listen to podcasts when I drive. Mm-hmm. So I think what I would be listening to would be this podcast.
Don't say it.
No, I wouldn't actually be doing that. I'd probably be listening to the Totally Football Show podcast, to be all, okay, honest with you.
That's
my favorite podcast these days.
So Paul said that he would be listening to Float On by Modest Mouse. I think I incepted him a little bit, though, because I'm pretty sure there's a car crash in that song.
There is. Yeah.
And I said I would be listening to the Thong Song by Cisco.
Do you listen to that song, though?
Yes.
How often?
I mean, once every 2 years.
Tastes
and
just
only,
like it sounds.
Only on the tractor.
Sounds just like it costs.
Okay.
But going back from that.
Worst song.
No, ever. Yeah, the worst song. Yeah.
Worst
so
song.
I was.
So what is the worst song, Francis?
It was represented. I mean.
Your choice was in the article.
I was not asked to be in the article.
No, of course not.
But, you know, my friend texted me who.
Who?
I don't think you know him. My friend Naman texted me and asked, how do I get in these articles? I was like, I can't help you get in this article. Daisy didn't even ask me to be in this article, which
that was an oversight.
Far be it from me to make editorial demands. But it was Happy by Pharrell was represented there. I hate that song. I think it is so bad, so cynical. I think it's like, I don't know, not in a way that like a pop song can just be like, you know, annoying. Like I think it's like an evil song. I hate it.
Yeah.
But the other one that I was reminded of the other day is that, what was that Portugal the Man song from? I Can Feel It Still. I hate that song too, but that's more in just like a way, like,
did you
I
just
hate
sing on this podcast?
God,
again?
I need to stop. I might do more accent impressions later.
More demure. You know what I did that was very demure? I don't want to move on from this yet, but I've had a terrible cough. I pre-unwrapped 2 cough drops, and I just have them sitting next to me if I need them.
Very mindful.
Very cutesy. Mm-hmm. Very respectful. So my choice is Hotel California, and that also is like, other people have that choice as well.
Mm-hmm. Are you a big Steely Dan fan?
This one I think popped off the most of any. I do love Steely Dan.
Me
I
too.
Actually did not know about that history. Yeah, no, I didn't know about the beef. I love Steely Dan. We can talk about that sometime.
We can. But so this was the most popular dirt. What do you call it? I can't even remember. It wasn't
so.
A catchy term.
I mean, Desire Be Desired did pop off, but I think this one more dirt prompts. I don't know what our next one is yet, actually. So text me if you have ideas. I mean, the obvious one would be best song, but I just think it's not going to hit the same.
Cause you want drama. You want like worst song. You need the negativity. It's not even negativity. You need the criticism.
Oh, here's the Catholic in you.
Yeah, no, but you need like you need something to disagree on. You need something to disagree.
Yes.
That's what Twitter is about, and it popped off on Twitter.
That
so Twitter's about disagreeing.
That's what Twitter is about. The disagreement app.
It is. It
X, is. The disagreement X. app.
You know, I think I saw a tweet from Elon the other day where he called it X/Twitter, which I thought was just pathetic.
He's like, yeah, I mean, right, yeah.
Yeah. Did it bring you a lot of new subscribers or anything? Or was it just like a, I mean, like on the newsletter, or was it just like a, you know?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, New York Times bump, itty bitty, worst song of all time bump. Huge. They're still rolling in. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about this Cozy Tech article that you sent me. So I was not familiar with this writer, Venkatesh Rao.
Yeah. Really good.
4,200 words.
I pay for Ribbon Farm. I get a lot out of it. Mm-hmm. I don't always read it in real time, but...
You forwarded this to me like a week ago. I didn't read it until an hour ago.
Well, and who can say if I read the full thing ever? But thank you for pulling out the best passages for us.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. It's really dense. So this guy, he's been writing this blog, Ribbon Farm, for 17 years. And then he's been doing this newsletter version, I guess, for like 5 years, I think he said. But reading it, it's kind of like dense philosophy to read it. Like it's like he's referencing all these other ideas.
Well, I think he's self-referencing stuff that he's already laid out. So the experience of reading the newsletter is like this kind of cumulative education of these threads, which I mean, we do endure it as well, but our ideas are just not as heady.
Not as dense as that. Yeah. No, right. It's like deep, deep, like tech ideology.
Right. Because if you've never heard somebody compare tech to like the Cambrian explosion or whatever, like,
yeah,
he has a very evolutionary theory of tech, which is not.
It's really interesting. It's really compelling, I should say. Yeah. But I definitely like, I was like, damn, I'm not getting everything out of this that I could be. But I think he also like,
don't think you're giving yourself enough credit.
No. Well, I got plenty out of it. But every 1,000 words, it's 4,200 words. I put it in wordcounter.com, my favorite website. And very Virgo of me now.
You know, you can just get like a browser extension for that.
That would disrupt my entire way of being online.
You do, baby.
Maybe I should. Okay, but anyways, like every 1,000 words, he says like, okay, so what is Cozy Tech? And then he gives a different definition. And it's kind of hard to define succinctly.
Good bit.
I'll read one definition from near the beginning.
That stood out to me as well.
Yeah. Cozy Tech isn't a prescription or a description or a singular subculture. It is rather an interesting, reachable equilibrium that a whole constellation of alt tech subcultures, each individually perhaps delusional, but collectively rational, are driving towards and might actually reach. And I think the one other thing to add context is he talks about these capital T tech eras versus background tech eras, where the capital T tech eras are these like concentrated, you know, like, I don't know, innovation driven, where it's like all this energy, like what we're in now, where it's like this super tech heavy culture, whereas technology is something that's always existing and developing in the background. But I think he said like he sees like the past 200 years as being 20% capital T tech, 80% background tech. So that's kind of, I don't know, the groundwork.
I mean, okay, my layman's understanding, I could be wrong, is like, I think he's talking about, this is like lesser the last 200 years, I would say more the last 20, where tech has been truly global. You know, we had this idea, software eating the world, and it's not different softwares in different markets. It's the same software.
Capital S software.
Yeah. That's meant to scale everywhere. And I think for people who came up during this time period, you're around 30. I'm a little older. I'm 33. We can't really remember a time before technology was global, or the aspiration of any technology company was to be truly global. And Cozy Tech is tech that develops more in specific pockets and specific markets for specific functions. I mean, that's the best way I can understand it outside of the capital T and lowercase t rubric. And the interesting thing that he talks about in predicting this transition into like lowercase t and more background heavy tech is he says something that's so, I mean, it's very confident. I like it because I identify with this mindset a lot where he's like, he gives all of these conditions and he's like, I actually don't have to be right about all of this. I only have to be right about like one. And I think that's true because even those of us that don't work inside the technology industry, we can sense this happening.
Well, let me read off these conditions that he's saying too. So there's four conditions. He says that the harnessed force condition is failing. Moore's law troubles is there's at most another 10 years and maybe 40 times improvement headroom left. And then the music stops. Second is that systemization is starting to break. I'm not going to read all these. They're so long. Third is that right now, political economic conditions for this, you know, tech world we're in right now are still positive, but that might change. And then lastly, he says that cultural conditions are arguably broken because Silicon Valley is no longer a good environment for creating multi-generational path-dependent compounding results, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to read it all. But yeah, he's saying that only one of these has to break. Only one of these four things has to break.
Yes. And I also think young founders today, they don't really want to create the next Facebook. Mm-hmm. They've seen like the double-edged sword of truly global networks, truly global technology. This generation is more values driven. And I think the stuff that we're seeing come out of it, like I knew we were going to talk about Cozy Tech. I actually didn't recognize the names of the companies that he lists off in the beginning. But as I was falling asleep last night, I saw something on my timeline and I texted it to you. It was called TinyPod. And you and I both had the same experience where we're clicking through the site. The site's very well done. It's like,
beautiful, you know, scrolling dynamic situation.
It's a scrolling dynamic. I mean, it's showing you something that looks like an old iPod.
This basically. New product. Yeah. It looks like an old iPod. If an old iPod was a phone.
Right. And it's showing all the stuff that you can do on it. And I'm like looking at this being like, how are they not going to get sued by Apple? I don't understand. And you get to the end of the flow and you realize it's a case that goes around an Apple Watch. The screen that you're looking at and the apps that are available.
It's just an
That's
Apple Watch.
Your Apple Watch.
Yeah.
And it's a modification on it that adds a scroll and gives it basically the same dimension as a phone. And I was like, that is genius. And to me, what makes that Cozy Tech is like, we're not trying to disrupt Apple. We've created essentially an appendage, but it draws really heavily on nostalgia for older Apple products in a way that Apple has sort of forcefully had to move on from because of market dynamics, whatever. Like, unless, you know, maybe they dig back and they produce it again at some point, but there isn't like a new untapped market for an iPod right now. There's some people that buy it out of nostalgia and there's some young people that buy it out of novelty, but it's not like, oh man, like if we bring the iPod back today, we could make like billions of dollars in Latin America. Like the market just doesn't work that way anymore. So you see like these pockets of like stuff popping up that's like,
well, okay, let me say,
TinyPod isn't new.
Yeah. I didn't think it was genius, though. It's not, that's why, because it's like, it's just like you still, like, to me, when I'm scrolling through, I'm like, okay, this is cool because it's about like getting you less addicted to your phone. It's like, here is a lo-fi phone. And I have a friend who has it looks like a tiny iPhone that's like, I don't know, like it's like an inch by like 2 inches. It's like, it's a little bigger than that, but it's so small. And like it runs on Android, I think, but it's like not as pleasant to use as an iPhone.
Not a light phone. It's not a
no,
light phone.
It might be. I don't know what it's called.
Okay.
But the point is like, I thought this was that. And I think, I mean, I still have an iPhone. I use it, but I thought that was cool because it's like harder to use and annoying. Actually, have you ever put your iPhone, imagine you have an iPhone, to like grayscale settings?
No, you know, it's weird. I think this is a personality thing for me. I don't play games with myself around it. Like I don't, Ben, my husband, he just got a brick.
That's the thing, you lock it in, you lock your phone in it, right?
But you just tap it and it locks you out of a predetermined apps. Yeah. I mean, I think that's brilliant. I think for me, I have this weird, like, I think it's like a thing around suffering, like with you, where it's like, I have this sense that like my discipline should be such that I should not need tools for self-control.
Yeah.
And I have this sense that like, if I use a brick or I play games with making my phone harder to use that I will have already lost.
Mm-hmm.
That being said,
I agree with you.
Two years ago, I was like, I want to tweet less. I took Twitter off my phone. I log in on Safari on my phone.
Well, it certainly
which makes it less pleasant, but no, of course not. No, I just got used to it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's an ego thing for me where it's like, mm-hmm. I can't admit that I need help with self-control. So I won't use any of these tools. So, I mean, fortunately, like I don't have a more addictive personality than I do. So it's generally okay. But I don't think there's anything wrong with using these tools. I think they make a lot of sense to have. And to be honest, like TinyPod looks really cool. And Ben's been offering to buy me an Apple Watch for a long time. That's so I'm like, maybe I want it. I don't know. Maybe I want it.
Do you wear like a watch normally?
Well, this is a whole other story. I lost my watch in November 2023. I went through my phone to
that's
see
almost
the last
a year ago.
Photo of me wearing it. I know. I think I thought I would find it when I moved and I didn't. And so I didn't have it in the category of lost. I was like, it's simply misplaced.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still like, I'll find it. I don't think that I left it somewhere that's not my house
You've moved since, right?
I have moved since. I think it's in a pocket somewhere, but I went through all my pockets. So this watch was really meaningful to me. I bought it as a present for myself after I had a piece in the New York Times magazine. They pay very generously. They pay like $2 a word.
Oh, wow.
And it's Grand Seiko, which is an amazing Japanese brand. It's lovingly crafted. It meant a lot to me.
That's what watches are about, right? Meaning.
Yeah. So the watch that I actually was wearing in the New York Times profile has an interesting story around it as well. That's a vintage Longines watch with an inscription. I bought it. It was pre-owned. It has an inscription on the back of the face that says "To Harry from your plant friends." And I wrote a piece, or I did a project at one point where I had a bunch of my friends write short stories about who Harry was on the watch. And then I posted them on my watch Instagram, which was very fun. I have a watch Instagram.
Oh, okay.
And I've written about that one. So I wore the Longines in the photo because I wanted to be wearing a watch because I think watches are very cool. But long story short, I've never owned an Apple Watch. I don't like the aesthetics of them. I recognize that they're convenient. But would I buy one to be part of a TinyPod? Like maybe.
Yeah.
I'm really curious.
Well, but then would you leave your iPhone at home? Because to me, that it only is interesting it's actually to me only interesting if you get rid of your iPhone and you just have the
I can get rid of my iPhone. Can you like respond to emails on it or only read them?
I'm sure you can, but you probably have to like Siri dictate. But then you have to use your computer. But I think that's the hard part. Like, both of us, like, you know, our work is all about being on the internet in many ways and using, you know, and emailing, et cetera. So it's like, you kind of have to, you can't like opt out, at least for us, right? Of having the iPhone or having the smartphone.
I know. And there really isn't any benefit for me to being less communicative.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Like,
well, wait, let me drop in another quote here from the Cozy Tech that I liked that I think is very relevant to where we've taken this. This comes near the end. He says, technology isn't technology unless it is unbridled, unrestrained, and unaligned, quote unquote, to some degree, periodically forcing us to destroy and remake our understanding of ourselves. The point of technology, as far as I'm concerned, is to create and subject ourselves to a co-evolutionary pressure. First, we make our tools, and then our tools make us, and that's a good thing.
That's true. I actually, this aligns really well with an interview I did with a philosopher named Don Ide. I did this for Guernica like maybe 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole philosophy was like, we make technology, but technology makes us.
Yeah.
And it's not just computers. It's like a pencil. Like, you know, talk to me about how, like, when you're using a pencil, you're acting on the pencil.
Well, that's what he's talking about. You. That's what in the Cozy Tech essay, too, he's like talking about, like, the pencil is background technology. Like, when it's just like, you know, however many years and you're using a pencil, that's like lowercase t technology error.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the this interview that I did with Don Ide, which he then included in one of his future books, which I was so honored by.
Okay.
We were specifically focusing on medical technology, actually, and medical imaging, that the ability to see the inside of our bodies changed our understanding of our bodies, like the ability for you to see your brain, the ability for you to see your heart. And I've always, that interview has stuck with me for a long time. So I am very aligned on this, but I also think like unbridled is a very loaded term, right? Like,
yeah.
It's kind of funny.
I almost don't really know what he means by saying it on no limitations. No, because then he says unrestrained. What does he mean by unbridled here?
Well, and it's like we're co-evolutionary with animals. Do we let them be unbridled? No, we like we've oppressed every other species. Yeah. We've domesticated every other species. So the idea that we wouldn't domesticate a computer and AI is like kind of crazy. Like they don't even have souls.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, do animals have souls? Do we want to do that?
No, I don't want to do that. I think they probably do. No, because then it's like, well, do like, you know, mosquitoes.
What do you think the worst song is to an animal?
To an animal?
It's got to be Happy Birthday also.
No, I'm going to guess I'm just going to say like noise music as a genre.
Do you know the Beatles song that at the end has a really, really, really high pitched noise? It's one of the songs on Sgt. Pepper, but I can't remember which one it is.
No, I used to know every Beatles song by heart, but I haven't listened to them in a long time.
Well, you're no longer
a child.
No. Completist. You're no longer a completist.
Completionist. No, completism. Completism would be, you know, accepting only listening to some Beatles songs. I'm no longer a completionist. I'm a completionist in recovery.
Sure. Yeah. Well, okay, so the end of the song, there's a really, really high-pitched noise that supposedly only dogs could hear, but I swear to God, I heard it one time, and it was horrible. It was really bad.
Yeah.
Do
you have a dog? No, you don't have a dog.
No, I wish I had a dog.
You had a dog? I don't wish I had a dog.
Why?
The responsibility. I live in New York.
The responsibility, do you wish that you had one? Like the reason you don't is because the responsibility.
No, I like having access to a dog. I had one growing up. But like that, you know, you could call that cozy dog ownership. One word. Because it was on the farm, so the dog just runs around.
The dog was unbridled.
Yeah, the dog was unbridled. Wait, okay. Last thing.
Wait.
Go ahead. Go ahead. No, you go.
I did have another last thing.
Okay. Last things.
This is an example of cozy tech, or in the article, the founder called it calm tech.
Yeah.
I interviewed for Dirt. This was back in April. I interviewed Anjan Kata, who has a company called Daylight Computer Company, about a Daylight tablet.
Daylight, they've got the tablet. Yeah. It looks cool. You know, the marketing campaign, the videos for Daylight.
The marketing was very good. So this is actually not a modification of something that already exists. This is an innovation, which I wasn't sure about when
it's like, for those who do, it's basically like a tablet, like, but more like an e-reader almost in the way it looks, but it's like kind of grayscale and you can like see the screen in light. It's like trying to push forward.
Well, I want to explain the specifics of it because I actually think it's very interesting. So your phone is sort of like a flashlight. Light emits from your phone. It goes through the layers of the phone and the colors, and you know, it displays the colors as we see them, right? And then if you have a Kindle or an e-reader that is doesn't emit light, it absorbs light, most likely the technology is something similar to e-ink, which is like proprietary. So like Daylight is not using e-ink, they're using a different process. But your Kindle, historically, or an e-reader, which absorbs light, and that's why it's easier on your eye, has not been fast enough to run apps.
To like render images.
So you cannot go on the internet on that screen, or if you can, it's really slow. Some other companies do this, but it's not slow. I mean, it's not fast.
Yeah.
So what they are offering is this same absorptive screen, but with the innovation that makes it fast enough to run apps. That's how it was explained to me.
Yeah.
So that's different from Tiny Pod. It's cozy, but somebody, they had to improve the tech that already exists. It's not putting a case around an Apple Watch.
Yeah. So the word cozy here too, I think is kind of confusing. Like when you first sent me this cozy tech article and I like opened it up and I start reading it, I was like, oh no, I'm gonna, this is gonna take like half an hour to read. I have to save this for later. I was like,
I gotta get cozy.
No, but that's not what it's about really. Like it's more of like, it's not like cozy in like a cutesy way. It's more like, I don't even know. Like, okay. One more quote.
Is he using cozy to like, he's using cozy to talk about scale, not emotion?
He's using it to talk about scale. Like he says here, I imagine cozy tech as a mutualist dissensus of background tech philosophies that are united in one main way, seeking a viable emergent alternative to capital T tech. One that does not need to be pure paradigm or philosophically monoculture. That would be to become the very thing you're trying to resist. So, I mean,
monoculture. I mean, that's global, right?
Yeah. Well, he's putting it at like the center of this Venn diagram of three things: the maker movement, permaculture, and open source movement. All of these things being like directly within tech. So it's like his point is like it's about an equilibrium. Yeah, it's the opposite. It's the opposite of monoculture in a way that like, I don't know. You read the article.
This also has a relationship with like the hardware resurgence too, because I think a lot of these new niche hardware companies, like Teenage Engineering, for example, are sort of examples of
other great marketers. Marketers,
the Medieval
hardware.
One, insane.
So good,
insane.
It was one of the things where I was like, man, I really want to buy this for $300 or whatever it is. Use it once for half an hour and then resell it at a 60% loss on eBay 3 years later.
Well, they should let you like
rent review it for Tasteland.
They should have Rent the Runway for like 30-year-old men in Bushwick that wanted to want stuff like Teenage Engineering.
They do. Well, Rent the Runway for 30-year-old men in the Bushwick Ridgewood area is just Grailed, I think.
Sure, maybe. Have you shopped on Grailed before?
Many times. And in fact, I have also resold things on Grailed.
Well, okay, so I couldn't
at a loss. Like
half hour before we were supposed to record, I didn't know where my mic or headphones were. I knew Ben had reorganized his desk, but I was like, look at my mic. It's huge. Like, where is it? Like, in my house? It's not. I couldn't find it anywhere. He had very lovingly nested them in a Nike Air shoebox next to his desk. So I'm like, and there's like a lot of the shoeboxes. I'm just like going through and I opened the shoebox and I was like, oh, thank God. So
that's nice.
Sneakerhead storage solutions.
Okay. I want to talk about, I don't really want to talk about this, but I do want to talk about.
Well, why talk about it then?
Because it's okay. Well, I don't want to talk about Demure Mindful, really.
I don't want to talk about this either.
That turns it. But I do want to, but the thing I do want to talk about is I was like pleasantly surprised when I saw, what was this? On August 21st. So like a week ago. Netflix posted a video with the creator, Jules LeBron, who was doing this, like, you know, it was just like a video of her showing how she'd created a collection on Netflix and you could browse it. And like, whatever about the thing itself, but I felt like that was rare to see a company like Netflix, like quickly hop on this trend and presumably compensate her for like coming up with this thing. I was like, you know, okay, that's nice. Like, I'm so tired of hearing people say very demure, very mindful. I think I might have muted it on Twitter, but I thought that was
did
nice.
Did you mute and me?
I did not. Actually, I didn't mute it. But what I really wanted was the ability to mute it. I think I might have talked about this last time. I want the ability to mute words in Reels or in TikToks on Instagram. That's what I wanted. A couple days later, I saw a tweet or an article saying that Jules LeBron had tried to trademark the phrase specifically very demure, very mindful. And some guy in Washington State had already trademarked it. And that was like, because at first it's like, okay, this is, you know, cool. Like, this is a meme that's about to die, whatever. But it's cool that she might be making some money off of it. That's great because that usually doesn't happen.
Well, okay. I mean, maybe we should have a lawyer write in. We should just have a lawyer on call for this podcast. I love a lawyer, just having one.
The most expensive podcast in the world.
Listen, I mean, you can make an argument though, like if you have notoriety for something and somebody else tries to trademark it under you, like, because it's like Coca-Cola, like, I mean, they obviously try to think of all possible combinations, but like if I try to go out and like trademark Coke pomegranate, because for whatever reason, yeah, it's not already in there. I mean, that's a little different because Coke is like an existing trademark, but like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think if somebody tries to trademark somebody that something that somebody else already has, like, pretty provable notoriety.
There should be like a
for,
right of provenance, or I don't know.
Well, I think that there is. Yeah. But you got to, you actually have to figure it out in court. You can't, it's not.
Like, and presumably she's, you know, it would cost more in court to figure it out than she would ever make money from doing it.
Well, potentially. Yeah. Or you settle with that guy and give him some money to mm-hmm. fuck off. But I think, you know, I can see in the notes, like, we're talking about this woman and like Hawk Tua, and like, when is a meme played out is really the question. And like, I think the best thing that brands can do is when these moments come up, align with that creator, but don't force them to keep doing the original bit. Like, yeah, you're like, oh, okay, mm-hmm, you're an interesting person. What do you actually want to do? What's your actual deal?
Yeah.
And, but you know, so many brands don't do this. They don't allow the person to evolve, and they get really stuck in the original meme or identity, which is a shame.
Well, because the value isn't necessarily the meme itself. It's the audience that the meme built rapidly.
Totally. And like, just use that to identify the talent and give them money to do what they actually want to do, which is not repeat the same word or meme over and over again.
Yeah. That's no, that's really smart, actually. I think people fail to do that. Mm-hmm. This is okay. So this is kind of about memetics. This is how I got to this. Are you mm-hmm. familiar with Fabrizio Romano?
Mm, refresh me.
He is the 123rd biggest Twitter account in the world, I understand. Okay. And he basically is this Italian football soccer journalist who tweets about transfers. And he tweets a lot. Okay. I was looking at the other day. I think he has tweeted in the past 30 days. He's tweeted 2,300 times.
Okay.
Constantly tweeting. There's another guy, David Ornstein, who works for
The
Athletic.
Does he announce transfers first, or is he reacting to
them?
He
does. So he reacts and he announces first. But like, okay, like, I haven't been like following the sport for so long. I understand that it used to be more exciting. Like, you know,
is he Men in Blazers adjacent?
They do pay him to have a. He has a podcast with them. Yes.
Got it. Okay. So I kind of know who he is.
Yeah. But so the point is, like, he breaks transfers. He tweets constantly. Like, there's this one transfer for Arsenal that's happening right now. That hasn't Mikel Merino hasn't closed yet from Real Sociedad to Arsenal. He's tweeted about it 30 times in the past month. Point is, though, like, he's got his trademark line too, like, here we go, like, this transfer is happening, blah blah blah. And he's doing some real journalism. He's often also getting accused of like just being paid off by agents to like promote a player that, like, why is he talking about, you know, this 17-year-old moving from like Charlotte FC to wherever when he never talks about the MLS, whatever. But
so he raises the stock of that.
He raises the stock of the player, yeah, and it probably helps them get a bigger fee. So
insider trading.
Yeah. So he's a really interesting figure. But more interesting to me right now is these kind of imitators, these like 12-year-old imitators of his who have popped up on Instagram and TikTok. The first one, these are like reels I've been getting. The first one, this guy must be like 12. He's a British kid named Winner Shipamba.
Are we picking on children again?
No, I'm not picking on children. I think this is actually fascinating.
Okay.
And I think what they're doing is really earnest, but it's like, okay, so this kid has 922,000 as of this recording on TikTok. And then there's this other kid named Winner Little B. Weird that they both, I don't think the second one's named Winner, but I feel like the first kid is actually named Winner. And this kid has 202,000 on Instagram, and they've got their own catchphrases. Winner Shipamba says, "There we land" in his reels. And then Winner Lil B says, "Yes, guys, it's official. It's confirmed. The deal is sealed." So like all three of these people have their own sort of like meme of like within their own thing. But to wrap it up a bit, like what's really fascinating about it to me is like, there was this interview with the kid Winner Shipamba on CBS Sports Galazzo, and they're saying like, what inspired you to start doing this? And one, he said that like, he has a big family. They wanted to go on a vacation to Spain, but they couldn't afford it because the family is too big. So he was like trying to find a way to make money. So he started making TikToks. So that's really sweet. And then he says like, yeah, obviously I'm inspired by Fabrizio Romano. He's probably the best sports journalist in the world, which is like, very questionable, but you know, it's again sweet and earnest that this kid is doing it. But so two things. What's funny to me is that like they can't be breaking original stuff. I think Winashapamba, I think I did see one video where like a club, a soccer club, actually worked with him to announce a transfer, which was really interesting. But I think a Spanish club should do a promotion with him and pay for his entire family to go on a trip to Spain.
Of course, I'm as a brand deal. Hasn't happened yet.
I, you know, by the time this podcast is live, it might have.
I'm going to say something. I think young people, I mean, this is part of just being young. I don't think it's Gen Z specifically. They don't necessarily have the media literacy to understand the difference between breaking news and aggregating news for your specific audience.
Yeah.
They just don't. And that's okay. I think it only becomes a problem when it brings containment or in certain high misinformation environments. But like if you're 12, yeah, you want to hear about transfers from another 12-year-old,
I think
Twitter.
It's sweet too, because it's like this kid is that, you know, training some muscle or building an audience, and like he's not going to do this forever. And the comments are actually so positive, where it's like everyone's like, we made the right guy famous, or like, yes, there we land, or like, you know, like famous players from big, like Bruno Fernandes from Fernandes from Manchester United is commenting on it, like there we land. So I don't know. I just thought it was this like really sweet thing, but also twisted in that like Fabrizio Romano's whole thing is kind of twisted, and he's like, you know, tweeting 2,300 times in 30 days is wild.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Anyways,
he's a completionist.
He is a completionist. He is definitely a completionist. I think last summer I saw a thing where he showed his screen time, and it was like 18 hours in a day.
Oof.
Anyways, that might be Tasteland for today.
This was Tasteland. Thank you for tuning in. We will be here next week.
See ya.